This is a sample of The Hidden Cottage by Mole Smith. The Hidden Cottage by Mole Smith, Chapter 1, Breakdown. He had seen it many times before, tucked away behind the trees and on the side of the hill on the road he took to and from Witney in Oxfordshire, a lonely cottage with no residences around it to form a neighbourhood or forge a community. He had wondered about it often and had in fact, more than once, seen female clothes hanging out in the garden on a washing line. Was it an old lady using traditional drying methods rather than a tumble dryer, or perhaps, a person with little money? Maybe a younger beautiful woman who preferred a setting and abode away from the maddening world of tattooed, misshapen, and ill-educated masses? His imaginings of the unknown occupant moved through levels of order that started with the normal, an old lady nearing the end of life, to the exotic and bizarre, an alien from another world, a time traveler from the Middle Ages, stuck in this time frame, a witch or a vampire, a prostitute receiving clients secretly. He wondered now what he would find as he climbed the path towards it on a dark, cold, autumn night. Gerald had never once thought he would be doing this, going to knock on the mystery cottage door. If he had paid more attention to watching out for potholes, and if he'd had charged his phone fully, he would not have needed to be doing this. But waiting for buses, so infrequent at night on rural routes, was not something he wished to do on such a cold evening, and he was unequipped for standing outside in the cold. The path was steeper than he'd first thought. If an old woman lived up there at the top, she'd have to be on steroids to walk up and down here, he thought. There was probably a car hidden away at the top, but then again, he'd seen no drive. Gerald paused for breath and looked back towards the road and his broken-down Mercedes, but couldn't see it. Too many bushes hid it from view. Strangely, despite walking and climbing the slope at a fair pace, the road seemed no further away from when he'd looked before. The darkness played tricks with the eyes without more references on the landscape. He turned back to look at the cottage and felt more drawn than ever to that warm glow of light flickering out from a small window. As a soft breeze passed his face, he could detect the unmistakable smell of burning wood. Hopefully, a wood-burning stove warmed the room with a person sitting inside musing her memories. The little old lady, he imagined, lived there. An owl hooted from the trees, a male looking for his mate, Gerald thought as he resumed his climb. He worked in Witney but lived in Wantage. At one time after his divorce, he'd considered moving there, but he was a man who loved the countryside too much and found Witney with its many roads and access to the A.40. Too busy and towny for his taste. He preferred his beloved Berkshire Downs and the unspoiled views across timeless, unwalled fields that were afforded him not a mile away from his home. His wife, and the man she had betrayed him with, once a close friend of his, now lived there, but he never saw her and they had no children. Since then, 3 years ago, he had been alone, such hurt from the betrayal took a lot of getting over. He had not lost one person dear to him, but two, which made the blow so much more hurtful. He was out of breath again, but certainly he had covered more good ground. Well, that's what he thought until he turned and looked back towards the road. He was bewildered. It was as though he'd been walking on the spot as the road seemed no further away than before. Maybe, after all, it wasn't a little old lady who lived up there, but a witch after all, one who had cast a spell around her hovel to keep strangers forever away. He shook his head to cast out such stupid notions and carried on climbing again. The flagstones beneath his feet were cracked and covered with small plants, which had teased their way past the rugged edges to triumph in the sun and the light. It was not difficult to imagine plants consuming entire cities in under 100 years if civilization suddenly failed, swept away by global war or a worldwide pandemic that scientists had failed to stop. And he thought such a conclusion to the world of humans grew ever more likely, given the dire state of the news. The cottage was definitely closer now, and he could see shadows moving around inside. One more breather, he thought, and then he'd reach it in the next tranche. He bent over slightly, took a few deep gasps of air, and turned to check how far he'd come. At last, the road looked much further away. He let out a sigh of relief and turned to begin the final bit of his journey, but instead of starting off, stood there gaping. The cottage seemed twice as far away as when he last looked. It started to rain, and that breeze which had previously carried the welcoming promise of warmth not 10 minutes ago, grew now into an icy threat with a whispering promise of pain and torment should he continue. He wasn't one for turning back. Once Gerald started a thing, He'd made it his absolute rule to finish. He bowed his head and with his will fortified, he stomped one foot down, and then the other in committed strides to reach that cottage. He only broke his step once, it was to pause when that sixth sense we all have but often ignored, the feeling that you are being stared at, alerted him. He looked to his side and sure enough, over there in the trees, a roebuck deer, its large eyes watching him. It seemed to shake its head, then disappeared back into the shadows. Gerald labored on until he stood outside an old door, one where the varnish and paint had peeled in patches, leaving a rough scaly brown skin as a testament to its desire to cling to the wood. The rain had increased dramatically, drenching his light jacket and running from his hair down beneath his collar, somehow as with a sinister mind, searching out his spine to chill it and grip him with trepidation as he lifted the large brass knocker and let it fall. As it landed with a heavy thud against the old door, the shadows falling through the windows onto the ground, froze. Nothing stirred inside, and it reminded him of one of his favorite poems, The Listeners. He raised it and let it fall again, the shadows moved excitedly. Someone in there was certainly either coming or hiding. There was an audible sound from within, too soft to discern. He put his ear to the door and heard a female's muted voice, "Who is it? Have you finally come?" A strange thing to say, he thought. "My car broke down. I need your help." The door opened to form a dark slither at its edge with a mouth floating there in the dark strip. "Don't you have a phone to ring for help?" "It's out of power," Gerald replied, noting a brass chain strung tightly across the dark crack. "Give it to me," the mouth said. Gerald reached inside his jacket, brought out his phone and offered it to the crack. Snatch. A skinny hand grabbed it and it was gone. "I mean you no harm. I only wish to use your phone," he shouted. The door clicked shut. He was annoyed. Gerald was now minus his phone and seemingly unwelcome. The thought of trudging back down to the road was not an option he wished to take. He rapped the knocker on the door and shouted, "Look. Please help me." The door opened to form a crack again as a voice shouted out, "Wait." The door closed shut again before he could plead some more. He waited, fearing he would be turned away. The door opened to a crack and his phone appeared in a slim white hand. He took it and the door shut again and stayed shut. He waited and shouted, but there was no activity until shadows flickered over the window glass. He moved to the window and saw her. The occupant was a lithe woman with long black hair with her back to him. Then her sixth sense made her turn and stare back at him. He was held there gaping at her beauty, a vision distorted by the water streaming down the glass, making it look like she was a kind of shape-shifting siren. Their eyes locked, and he felt the great sorrow behind those dark brown irises and through those ink-black pupils, which led in fine tunnels of organic fiber into a universe-constructed mind. He felt her sadness in his heart, not a thing thought in his mind, it seeped into his soul. She somehow knew he'd sucked it in, and as if to hide her pain from him, she shut her eyes and turned away. He rapped on the glass with his knuckles, went to the door, and banged the knocker, not stopping until the door opened wide. She turned and walked away into the shadows of the passage before he could see her clearly. Just as he was about to move, something brushed his leg and was gone. He looked to the side and fleetingly caught a fox's brush tail trembling, as it skulked away into a crop of trees. Foxes don't do that, he knew. Had it done it to warn him not to enter? Maybe some things in the world are so terrible that all species of life, from the hunted to the predated, came together in a desire to warn other living forms. Or was it the rain, the torment of the climb, and this sudden, unexpected, encounter with a beautiful woman, driving his thoughts towards exotic eccentric notions? He stepped inside and closed the door behind. "You had best warm yourself by my fire," he heard her shout. "But I have no phone here for you to call anyone." He entered a room. It was filled with furniture from a bygone age. She sat in a large worn chair, staring up at him, her arm raised and a slender hand pointing towards a flaming log fire. He said nothing but went and crouched down in front of it, pleased with its warmth, thinking how to proceed. She had said she had no phone. Could he stay the night, he wondered? He could sleep here on the floor. He turned to ask, but she was no longer there. Like a cat slinking off from a stranger, she had silently left him alone in the room. He stood up and shouted, "I'll do you no harm. Please don't fear me. I genuinely broke down. The bloody potholes. She appeared at the door. I'm making you a cup of hot chocolate. Sit down and relax. I fear no one, least of all you. She turned to leave, but he called out, "What's your name?" She smiled and walked away. Gerald stood up and looked around the room to select somewhere to sit. It must not be her chair, he somehow knew. There was another one similar to hers, and he sat in that. He wondered what might be in her mind. Reservations, probably, and fears that as a female alone, this stranger, him, might take advantage of her. He must try and put her mind at ease. Mind you, he thought, she was very desirable, but he wasn't the kind of man to be solely sexually attracted by such basic desires. His sexual appetite was more tied to deep emotions, not surface needs. Sex with a one-night stand always left the essence of emptiness in one's heart for him, he had discovered early in life when still a young man. Here. Drink this. You should not have come up here, she said, standing so close to him, he could smell jasmine from her body. She wore only a semi-transparent white nylon dress, and when she moved her naked form could be perceived beneath. Thank you, he said and took the mug from her hand. She walked away and went back to her chair. I am really sorry to intrude on you this way. My name is Gerald and I live in Wantage. And you? My name is Elvina, and as you have realized, I live here. He nodded and sipped the hot chocolate. I need to stay the night. It's a pity you came up, she interrupted him. Unfortunately, despite the deterrence, you somehow made it up here. You'll now be staying a lot longer than you originally thought. I don't understand. He started to say, but was unable to finish as she suddenly said something that made him fearful. Be quiet. Say nothing. Don't move a muscle. It's that time again. A darkness began to spread across the room. It rippled and blocked out everything it passed through, like someone. A magician, maybe. Was throwing a black cloth over his props to hide the mechanics that would create the illusion. It hid her from his view, then moved towards him. He heeded her warning and froze in the chair. The blackness covered him and moved on again across the room, and then was gone. He had witnessed no visibility in the brief moment the dark shadow passed over him, but when he looked at his mug, it was full, it was as though he had drunk none of it. Strange. He had no understanding of how this could be and only relaxed when she said, "It's gone. We're okay now until this time tomorrow night." He simply nodded. He wanted to ask her so much more, but he thought she would not say if he asked. Instead, he checked on what she had said earlier. Elvina, you said I'd be staying a lot longer than one night. She smiled. Yes, I did. You'll need to witness it for yourself. I'm for bed. You can sleep in this room. Can I trust you, Gerald? She stood up and stared at him. When he looked up at her, he could see her dark pubic hair through the fine pores of the nylon gown. She noticed and said, I was not expecting anyone from this locality. I live alone. Please do not anticipate anything from me other than guidance, as you are now trapped here within my prison. You should not have come here, but now that you have, we'll have to make the best of it. She walked past him. Again, the sweet smell of jasmine, and then she left the room. He sipped his drink and considered her remarks. He concluded that she must suffer some kind of mental illness. Of course, he was not a prisoner. He would leave in the morning, take a bus home, and sort out his affairs in the cold light of day. He would also contact the relevant authorities and try to get her help. The darkness? Yes, odd. But possibly understandable if witnessed again, maybe a trick of the light, the way the moon shone through the window, or a frequent cloud event, coupled with her troubled mind. He would ponder it no more. He would sleep on the floor tonight, maybe collect cushions first from around the room and spread them out in front of the fire. Yes. That was a plan. Chapter 2, Elvina. He woke up with the sound of his name being spoken. Gerald. I've made breakfast. It's in the kitchen. He looked up and saw her leaving the room. It was daylight and he'd had a dreamless sleep. He got up from the cushions on the floor and went out of the room, following the smell of cooked food into a kitchen of wooden walls and a small oak table, adorned with plates, cups, and cutlery. She sat at the table, waiting for him, smiling warmly and said, "Sit down. The food is being kept warm in the oven. It's a cooked breakfast. Do you eat meat? Very kind of you, thank you. Yes, I do. She stood up, picked up oven gloves and proceeded to take tins from the oven and serve food onto their plates. He saw it was fried eggs, tomatoes, mushrooms, and rashers of bacon. I'm out of bread, so no toast, I'm afraid, she told him, putting the empty tins in the sink, turning off the oven, and sitting down to start eating. They ate in near silence until she said, "We can take it in turns in the future, making meals and sharing the chores. Of course, I would share such work, but I'm not staying. I have to get my car towed away and tell my boss when I can get back into work." She picked up a teapot and poured tea into his cup and then into hers. She replaced the pot and smiled at him, denying him any reply. "May I ask you, Elvina, how long have you lived here for?" She shrugged. "A long time, but I cannot remember how long. It simply seems like forever, to be frank." He thought about that. Was it a case of amnesia? She was far too young to be experiencing Alzheimer's disease, I see. Where were you born? She shrugged again. How are your eggs? I prefer them a little soft and runny. If you prefer them all hard or all soft, I can do them that way for you next time. The eggs are fine, thank you. Do you have memory problems? What, a health issue? She replied. No. Not at all. I simply can't recall much about my time before being imprisoned here. Again, she spoke of the house being her prison. He'll challenge it, but in a way so as not to upset her in case she was, as he suspected, mentally ill. You seem to believe this is a prison. Have you ever tried to escape? She swallowed some food and sipped tea from her cup before looking up and staring long into his eyes with her deep, unfathomable dark brown ones. I see what you're thinking. I've often wondered how a stranger might react if they, too, found themselves trapped here like me. You think I'm mentally ill, don't you? I don't really know. Perhaps, when I leave, you might come with me down to my car. The recovery service will collect it after I've taken a bus back home and phoned them. You are welcome to come to my home, too. She closed her eyes and whispered, "Oh, to see the world outside." She opened them and stared at him with eyes glistening and about to release tears. But, as you are about to learn, shockingly, it's not possible. He watched a tear fall from each of her eyes to splash onto the side of her plate and run down to become part of yellow egg yolk. "I'm sorry for your sadness," he told her, now thinking to change the conversation. "I wonder, Elvina, do you realize how beautiful you are?" She laughed out loud. "Well, thank you, kind sir. Does your compliment also come with suggestions of me sharing my bed with you?" He laughed out loud then, too. "A good answer. I believe any man who laid eyes on you would find the same as me. Yes, you're highly desirable, but I'm not the kind of man to make such open suggestions. However, one can't help wondering that if I was, how such remarks would be met? I think we've said enough already on the subject. Perhaps, we can finish breakfast, and you can do your best to walk back down the hill? Okay. Fine with me. How do you get food here if you have no phone and can't go out to shop?" She stood up, took her plate, and scraped the remains into a small bin next to the sink. "I'll show you later upon your return from your stroll." She put the plate into the sink. "Have you finished?" she asked. He nodded, and she came to the table to pick up his plate. As her hand connected with it, his nostrils filled with the jasmine scent from her body, and he seized her wrist. She froze and stared down at him with her free hand pushing her dress between her legs as if to protect herself there from ill-conceived intentions. "Sorry. Hadn't meant to frighten you. I merely wanted to stay you for a second from your hurriedness to say thank you for your kindness." He let go. She stayed silent, taking his plate to the sink and repeating the action of clearing its waste before placing it on top of hers. He stood up and went over to her. "Elvina, why not find your coat and try to walk with me down the hill? It can do no harm." She turned, pushed her hair back from her face, and smiled, before telling him, "Okay. Just to show you I'm not mad like you think I am." The air outside was refreshing after a night in the cottage, and the sun was out, although it was still bitterly cold. He watched her fastening her coat and momentarily envied her for wearing one. His light jacket provided very little comfort, but the walk should soon warm him up, he thought. "Ready?" he asked.